You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long.
What's up? It's Sunday Fun Day here on 98.7 ESPN. We've got Giselle, who's producing the show back in New York. Was that a dedication to me, Giselle? Are you telling me that you miss me when I'm not on during the week and I'm just on Saturday and Sundays? Was that like a little...
ESPN's a better place when you're on air.
Checks in the mail, dude. Thank you so much. Giselle's producing the show back in New York. I'm in my living room on a beautiful Sunday morning. If you're listening, hopefully you're on your way to the golf course. Maybe you had an early tea time and you're on your way home. I wish I was with you. It's gorgeous out. And also Nikki is producing the show. She's helping out with the show as well. So the three of us are going to be with you for the next 3 hours. I want to have an interesting show today. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to get to, right? Because now we've got some dates on the calendar in regard to like when the NBA players are supposed to arrive, when we can expect the season to start, dates when Major League Baseball players start their spring training at their home fields, and when we possibly will see the first game, which reports are it's going to be one of the premier primetime games for the start of the season on opening day, whether it's July 23rd or 24th, is the Yankees against the Nationals. So we can see like a Garrett Cole against a Scherzer matchup, which would be great. It's like we could sit here and we could talk about all that, and we will. I've got Jenna Lane, who's going to join us from Tampa. She covers the Tampa Bay Bucks to talk about Tom Brady and him not listening to the NFLPA. I had Carl Francis, director of the communications from the NFLPA, on my show yesterday, you know, and sharing with us, you know, listen, COVID-19, a lot more serious than what most people, not most, what some people are thinking, obviously, in regard to where we are, people not wanting to wear masks or not obeying the 6 feet of separation in regard to social distancing. And of course, Tom Brady not listening to the NFLPA and still hosting workouts with his teammates. So I thought it'd be great to have Jenna Lane on. Also, the Tampa Bay Bucks are one of the teams that have been named in a request from Jamal Adams, as we know, safety for the Jets, as one of the landing places. So I thought it would be good to have her on. The Bucks do have the cap space to pull something like that off. Would they? I don't know. I think Dan Orlovsky was on Get Up earlier this week and said, this is Super Bowl or bust for the Tampa Bay Bucks. I truly believe that. Even though Tom Brady is Benjamin Button when it comes to his aging, I feel like he keeps on getting younger. He's still 43 and you know, what, three, the most years that he has left, maybe 5, you know, if he continues to eat the avocado ice cream, which seems to do wonders for him. So I'm really excited to have Jenna Lane on the show. She'll be joining us around 11. A good friend of mine, Jane McManus, who writes for the New York Daily News, is going to be joining us in about 25 minutes. And this is where I'd like to start off the show, because, you know, I'd like for us to have an honest conversation this morning in regard to, and like I said, we've got these dates in the books. We're really excited. Oh, man, Garrett Cole against Max Scherzer, July 23rd or 24th, primetime on ESPN. This is going to be great. If we don't change as a society living in a pandemic world right now, if we don't change the way we think and the way we act, not sure if anyone saw that this week. Giselle, did you see the video that went viral? Karen at a Whole Foods in Los Angeles. She was shopping.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so, right. I mean, you know, the video went viral. If you didn't see it, woman is shopping in Whole Foods in California. Majority of people in there, if not all of them, are wearing masks. She walked in there without a mask. She was asked to put on a mask, and she had a temper tantrum, threw her little basket down, screaming, yelling, accusing everybody being, you know, Democratic, just screaming politics. And then after, there was another video that could, did you see the second video that came out, Giselle, where she said that she has some kind of asthma and her doctor said that she cannot wear a mask?
I did not know.
You see that second? Keith Overman tweeted that one out. Anyway, I share the story just to say, like, you know, there are pockets, and we're seeing them around the country, states around the country, Florida, Texas, Arizona, where COVID-19 is going up. Why? Not everybody's wearing masks. Not everybody is obeying the 6 feet of separation, social distancing. You know, there are a number of people that are operating in society as if we're not living in a pandemic world. I'll take, for example, myself, living here in Hoboken. I've been trying, like, and if you've been listening to my shows, what I've been trying to do is I've changed my lifestyle, right? Like, I'm not going to, like, usually, if you know anything about me, I love food. I'm a foodie. I love fine dining. I love great wine. I haven't been in a restaurant since March, and chances are I'm not going into a restaurant until there's a vaccine. I'm just not. If you're scared, say you're scared. I'm telling you, I'm scared. Some people might think I'm an idiot. That's fine. I just want to be safe. But I've been doing a lot of things outside. I'm hiking now on Sundays. I'm going for a hike after the show. I started playing tennis. As you know, I play golf. Life has changed for me. So anyway, I'm on a walk down in Hoboken over by Frank Sinatra restaurant. And I walk by and the entire restaurant is packed. Granted, it's inside, but they have these, it's kind of like these windows that fold up. So it's kind of like an outside cafe, but it's not. It's inside and they're in there like sardines. They're scrunched in there. And I turned to my friend I was walking with and I said, what is going on here? The restaurant got cited by police. Got fined here in Hoboken, not obeying. So, I mean, and this is just my experience. So think about all across the country. And I share these stories with you, and I think we need to have a conversation because I love sport. If you're listening to Sports Talk Radio, I'm sure you love sport. Whether it's now a newfound appreciation and love for golf because it's the only thing that's going on right now, and you could wager on it. And it's fun to watch, which I've got some picks for you that I'll give you before we end this segment, just in case you want to get on board and get some money and possibly win some money today. You know, but here's the thing. Unless we as a society, unless we as a whole, okay, lock and step together as a community across the country, I said it. If you're scared, say you're scared. I'm scared. Sports won't, maybe they'll start up because it's good faith and we could try to get it going, but it won't end. I'm scared that it will be shut down. And Jane McManus wrote an excellent article in the New York Daily News. Again, I'm going to have her on at 9:30. I want this to be, I want us to have an interesting conversation. I don't want it to be political. I don't want it to be, well, our president's not wearing a mask. Why should I? Enough with that. I don't want it to get there. I want us to have a interesting, intelligent conversation this morning about how, why, and the possibility of people coming to the realization that unless we as a society all lock and step together, there is a chance that this isn't going to work. Whether it's the PGA's Tour, NBA, Major League Baseball, it's not going to work. I'm going to share a story with you right now. Jabari Parker, NBA player. You know, the NBA getting ready, players, they had to travel back to their home cities where they play, the teams that they're on, and get tested. Well, I want to say 16 players got tested. And all the players got tested. 16 players came back positive. 3 of those 16 were on the Sacramento Kings. And Jabari Parker was one of them. Well, what happens when you get tested positive? Well, you're supposed to isolate. And you're supposed to isolate yourself until you have two. This is the NBA rules. You're supposed to isolate yourself until you have 2 negative tests in the course of 24 hours. Well, Jabari Parker was seen playing tennis at a public park in Chicago without a mask yesterday. Now, this is beyond society, right? This is beyond us Joe Schmoes. Now, let's go one step further, because we should be doing all we can to make sure that we're putting our best effort forward so that we can lower the COVID rate and hopefully help these leagues sustain and be active and attractive and continue to operate. It's another thing when professional athletes are understanding the gravity of the situation and not abiding by the rules that are set forth by their league. And this is a major concern I have, because I highly doubt you, and with all due respect to professional athletes, look, I've covered them for years. You know, there many, many, if not most, are spoiled. And I get it. We as a society, we put athletes on pedestals. We admire athletes more than we admire teachers. And they're given the world. And so now they have to live and abide by this new set of rules that they don't want to. And again, I know I sound like I'm being stereotypical here. I know it's not all of them. I know it's not all of them. But it's a percentage. And it only takes one. That's the thing. COVID-19 is so contagious. It only takes one. And it spreads like wildfire. So, A, I'm concerned that we as a society, as a community, are not going to be able to do what we need to do. And B, I am worried that there is a percentage of professional athletes like Jabari Parker, who yesterday went out and played tennis in a public park without a mask. Granted, you could sit back and say, Anita, it's tennis. It's an individual sport. He's probably 20 yards away from the guy that he's playing. Really, are you a scientist? Do you really know exactly how these spores operate? Anita, he was outside. It's in sunlight. Sunlight kills it. Do you really know that for 100%? We don't know. And again, the NBA rules say you need to quarantine yourself until you have two negative tests in a 24-hour period. And this dude is out in a public park in Chicago playing tennis without a mask. This is just one example. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. We get back, I'll open up the phone lines. Let's have the discussion. I'm excited to have Jane McManus on. She wrote an excellent article in the New York Daily News specifically about this concern. I have Jenna Lane on with us a little bit later on the show. We'll take you to Tampa, talk about, you know, what's going on with Tom Brady and the Bucks. Could the Bucks be a landing place for Jamal Adams? David Berman, who oversees our Chalk and Daily Wager site, is going to join us at 10 o'clock. We'll get you some picks for the golf tournament that's on right now, the Travelers, that's down in Connecticut. Hopefully help you win some money on this Sunday afternoon. So Preston Johnson, professional handicapper, was on with me on Friday night for our gambling show, Week in Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. And he had some insight in regard to the NBA and who he thinks would be some wise teams that you could put your money down on in regard to futures bets, who he thinks potentially will win the championship, of course, if everything goes smoothly in Orlando, Florida. So I'm with you for the next 3 hours. I know it's called Sunday Funday, but sometimes we've got to have some serious conversations, and I hope we can do that in a very intelligent and respectful way.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. We do this every
time. People around the game are basically saying this has the potential to be a disaster, and they're very concerned about the implementation. And when you look at it from 30,000 feet, that would kind of make sense, because this is unprecedented. They're trying to put in health and safety protocol, but there's been no training. There's been no education. And not surprisingly, on the ground, what teams are starting to get feedback on is that while some players are coming in there saying, okay, you know, we'll do this social distancing, we'll do the mask, they're getting pushback from other players. And given the, you know, that which is what's happening in this country, and given this current context, it's hard to imagine this is all going to be able to work out unless everybody's pulling the rope in the same direction.
Lock and step. That's what I'm saying. Lock and step. 800-919-3776. We'll get to your calls shortly. But good friend of mine, Jane McManus, joins us here. She's got an excellent article out on the New York Daily News, specifically about the topic we're talking about. And that is, you know, how we as a society need to come together and do all the right things in order for sport to come back and stay back. Jane, how you doing?
I'm good, Anita. It's good to talk to you.
I know it's been a while, so good to hear your voice, my friend.
Absolutely, it's not a happy hour Zoom call, but it'll do.
No. Oh gosh, I swear, I wish I would have bought some stock in Zoom before this whole thing happened. But anyway,
exactly.
That's a conversation for another show. So if you can, kind of, folks who have not had the opportunity, the pleasure of reading your article in the New York Daily News, why don't you kind of give them a Cliff Notes version of what it's about?
Sure, I will. You look around and I think your lead in clip was really, really on target. You look around and we as a society are not very healthy right now. When you look at what's happening in Florida with, you know, over 9,000 cases, being diagnosed daily of this virus and Florida being the state where a lot of these leagues are looking to come back. Major League Soccer is looking to come back there, the WNBA and the NBA. And it just is looking increasingly like that's difficult. And it seems like I think our sports leagues are probably dealing with the same sort of cognitive dissonance that our culture is dealing with. I don't know if you've gone out and gone to, you know, some barbecues or gotten together with some friends, but we as a culture are having a hard time figuring out how we're going to interact with one another in this kind of new day and age. And, you know, if you're in a professional team setting, I think that's even magnified because if you play contact sports, for example, or if you play basketball, well, you guys are going to be interacting with each other physically on a court. So then what's the problem of doing it generally? And then if you do that, you're increasing the likelihood that you could transmit the virus from one person to another. And I think that's the same sort of thing that we're just kind of dealing with in our own lives. The arguments over mask wearing, you see these videos that go viral of people getting upset and coughing maliciously in someone else's face. These sorts of things. And it seems to me like until we as a culture are able to mitigate this virus so that it is not wildfire in our communities, that we're going to have a difficult time having professional sports. How do you get the Cowboys to New York in this kind of environment? You know, you have to have public transportation running so that you can get people places. You have to have delivery trucks running. You have to have, you know, stadium workers being healthy enough to make things work on a game day, even if you don't have fans. There are just so many things that go into putting sports together that have to be working properly. And we just don't have a lot of that happening right now.
You know, I had a caller, my first caller, Dan, who we just spoke to right before we brought you on. And, you know, he mentioned herd immunity. Once the pandemic hit, and again, I have this conversation with a number of people. I feel like Wednesday night, I was out in the city. I was having dinner with one of my favorite spin instructors, Ryan. And he was talking about him and his family were about to go to France. And the conversation was, well, maybe you should leave the country. Like, things might get bad. We don't know. Maybe you should just, maybe we'll just go to San Francisco. So him and his family went to San Francisco. That was my last night out. That was my last night dining out at a restaurant that Saturday. All hell broke loose. NBA player tested positive. And then all of a sudden, life as we know it comes to a screeching halt. And then for the next 3 months, we're quarantined and people are going out of their minds, right? And obviously, because we're here in New York and New Jersey, we got the worst part of it. It was absolutely terrifying. The number of people who lost their lives. I knew one. A friend of mine lost his life. On top of that, a number of friends, at least a dozen, who lost either a parent or a grandparent, whatever the course may be. You know, we were so affected here in this area. And now it's kind of gone. Like New York, New Jersey, we're the safe place now. You know, Texas, Arizona, Florida, they're feeling what we were feeling. They were experiencing what we were experiencing a few months ago. And because we were cooped up for 3 months, I think now there's this kind of like, you know, I think that there is a number of people who have this herd immunity kind of mentality. Like, well, if I get it, I get it. Chances are I'll be okay. Majority of healthy people are asymptomatic. And I don't know if there's a majority of people who have that 1, 2, 3 degree of separation in regard to somebody who's lost their life from this. So there's that disconnect in regard to that. I just think that my point, I know I'm very long-winded here, Jane, I'm sorry, but I think my point here is that we have gone through this roller coaster ride. We've gone through this, the last 4 or 5 months, these feelings and these emotions and these experiences that now I think there is a percentage of people who are kind of like in this herd immunity, survival of the healthiest. And that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, and I think it's bleeding out across the country, but because those parts of the states are experiencing it worse, it is going to affect what's trying to happen here in sport. You know, the NBA isn't starting in New York and New Jersey, and maybe they need to. Maybe Orlando shouldn't be the starting place, right? Because Florida is one of the hot spots right now. You know, I mean, maybe the thought process and the planning needs to be in the states that are not the hotspots, and maybe the herd immunity has already, you know, kind of happened in a greater percentage than in other areas of the country. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, Jane.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd just like to point out that we didn't have to be in this position where individuals are walking around just fatalistically assuming that they're probably going to get it and the cards will fall where they fall. You know, there in South Korea, fewer than 300 people have died from the coronavirus because they have a public health infrastructure. They have a united national message to let its citizenry know how to behave during a pandemic. We have none of that. It's every person for themselves, unfortunately. And I think that leads to a lot of the chaos. Having games in New York, I mean, you know, we have no idea what the viral situation is going to look like in 3 weeks. And then fortunately, that's the lag time between, you know, infection and presentation of symptoms. So you could, I mean, for example, when the NBA was planning the Florida bubble, quote unquote bubble, because it's not really, but when they were planning that, the instance of virus was actually far lower in the population in Florida than it was in New York. So it seemed like a smarter way to do it. As for herd immunity, unfortunately, you need about 60% of the population to have gotten and recovered from the coronavirus. And even with our massive numbers here in New York, I think we're under 10%. So to actually have an effective, quote unquote, herd immunity, we will need millions more to become infected with the coronavirus. And, you know, as you're aware, with greater infection comes greater death. And I think, you know, if we had, again, a functioning public health structure on a national basis with a testing strategy, with being able to track cases, then we wouldn't be having to have these conversations, which are horrible, right? Like, how many deaths are we willing to trade for basketball? And that's a terrible conversation to have. I do think also there's an assumption that, well, athletes will be fine. They'll just, you know, they'll go playing tennis in the park after they get diagnosed with the coronavirus, like Jabari Parker. But that may not be the case. Like, there are athletes who have sickle cell trait. There are athletes who have asthma, who have diabetes. We've heard, you know, Von Miller, the NFL, when he talked about recovering from this, how difficult it was for him to breathe. And he's somebody who had asthma. I think, you know, there are a lot of players out there who have incredible, successful careers because they're able to manage pre-existing conditions. And they don't talk about it on a daily basis. They don't let everybody know about that. But because they've able to get those things under control, or maybe they have family members that they don't want to put at risk. You know, we've seen athletes come out and talk about how their children might have something. And that's why they have made a decision that they don't want to participate in these upcoming seasons that are being planned. So there are a lot of different considerations that go into this. And, you know, I think, honestly, it's all very theoretical right now because you don't, you know, other than the National Women's Soccer League, which just started yesterday, you don't have a lot of games being played and you don't have this being tested. It's probably worth noting that their soccer is being played in Utah, which is a place that, you know, has just less of the virus, which is a good thing. But in the meantime, you know, we could very well see a player become very sick or die as a result of getting the coronavirus.
Let me just interject here because here's the thing, and God bless we haven't, okay? But here's the thing, Jane. It's like, I'll go back to AIDS and HIV, right? Like we didn't as a society, we didn't take HIV and AIDS seriously until Magic Johnson came down positive. It's one of those days that I remember exactly where I was. I was just finishing my finals in college. News broke. I can vividly remember him and Cookie at that press conference. And when he said, I'm HIV positive, that's when, in lack of a better word, because I know it's a family show, that's when stuff got real. And so I don't believe, so, you know, we're hearing about all these athletes, 16 NBA players tested positive, three of them were the Kings. Jabari Parker is one of them. He's out there playing tennis. The perception, I think because the perception is, well, listen, these are athletes. They're healthy. They get it. They'll be fine. I'm healthy. I'll be fine. I'm an athlete. I'm young. You know, I don't smoke. I take good care of myself. I work out 5 days a week. Until there is a healthy, prominent athlete who comes down with COVID-19, is in the hospital, is in on a respirator, and is, you know, fighting for his life, I don't think the perception will change. I don't think that, you know, the actions will change from those that feel like, hey, I'm like them. I won't get it. And if I do get it, I'll probably more than likely be asymptomatic and I'm going to be okay.
I think you might be right. And, you know, I think it also goes back to, you know, Rudy Gobert, when he tested positive, that's when the NBA shut down. And that's really when the cascade happened, where workplaces started shutting down and where schools shut down. And I think it is because we see things happening in a sports context, and for some reason, it's a little bit more real. I think back to your Magic Johnson analogy, and I think it's a really good one. I remember right before Magic Johnson was diagnosed, I had a friend who was diagnosed from high school who was gay, and I remember thinking back then that it was going to be a death sentence for him. And, you know, he's alive and well, and we still talk all the time, and he comes and visits, and we visit back and forth still. So obviously things can change in terms of health picture as well, right? We used to think that if you got HIV, that was it, you know, and that's not the case. So things can change. There can be treatments. There, you know, something could happen. If it's not a vaccine, then maybe it's something that, you know, there have been a couple of studies now with a particular steroid that have been given a lot of hope. And also remdesivir seems to have promise. So there could be things that will make this less frightening. But unfortunately, you know, I've known people who have died from the coronavirus as well, and I've friends who've lost parents, and it is a very real thing. And, you know, I really dislike that it would have to be something like that, where it's either a sports figure or somebody that you know have it and die from it, or have to reckon with it in order for it to become real to us. But it is just human nature. And, you know, the other thing that I think is human nature is, you know, the impulse to go play tennis after a positive diagnosis. And you know, what you've seen with Novak Djokovic, where he did this this limited tour tennis tournament in Croatia and Serbia. And you had three players test positive who were participating in that. And they were going out and partying and, you know, hugging each other, high fives and handshakes after matches and things like that. And this is also a place with very little virus. And I just think it goes to show also that people are going to behave like human beings do, right? We're not necessarily going to behave in the way that we know is proper, where we're staying exactly 6 feet apart and not interacting or shaking hands or hugging or anything like that. Like, people are people. And I just think if you put people in a bubble, that you cannot really expect that they're going to behave in a way that could be 100% responsible all the time. And I kind of feel like if you're going to have sports back, it has to be back in an environment where you can allow for that moment of irresponsibility and have it not be something that could bring the whole thing down. But I just don't know that as a society we're healthy enough for that to happen yet.
It's an excellent article, Jane. If you can, share your Twitter and your social media information so people can follow you and find your article.
Sure. I'm at Jane Sports, JaneSports.
It's just that simple. Jane, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday Funday. It looks like it's beautiful out. I'm going for a hike as soon as this show is over. And it's great to hear your voice again. Thank you for spending some time with us on Sunday morning.
Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Thank you.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
David, how you doing?
Good, Anita. How are you?
I'm all right. You're teeing it up today, huh?
Yeah, I am teeing it up today. I got 11:10 tee time. Going to go out and play 18, come home, watch the end of the Travelers, and then go from there.
Fantastic, fantastic. Just full disclosure, David and I teed it up earlier this week at Galloping Hills. And course is just it's magnificent.
Great.
It's like, man, fairways are like playing on carpet. And
fairways.
So David won the popular vote. I won the electoral vote. So he beat me in strokes. I beat him in matches. So
that's after I gave up a one up with two to play, and I taunted you on 17 and precisely lost my ball into the trees on 17. After I taunted you, good way to put you out right there is to throw my tee shot into the crap.
Anyway, let's try to win some people some money today.
Sure.
As you said, you're getting your golf game on early so you get home and watch the end of this thing. And there's quite a few. Well, first and foremost, looking at the leaderboard right now, we know Brendan Todd is at the top leaderboard, 18 under. Man, what a week he's had, especially shooting 61 yesterday. Magnificent. Along with Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson is 16 under. Listen, you know, I'll eat crow for a second and just say I have not been high on Dustin Johnson for quite a while, but 64 on Friday and 61 on Saturday, quite impressive. He has a shot of winning this thing, but I'm putting my money on Bryson DeChambeau. He's five shots back. He tees off around 145. He's shot under 70 all week long. He's crushing the ball, and you could get him 9-1. Who do you have winning this thing today, David?
I do like your play on Bryson because I think that 9-1 is good value. I do think five shots might be a little too far back for this course. This course tends to allow for a lot of low scores, as you've seen from Todd, McKenzie Hughes, and others over time. There's been a lot of 60, 61, 62s at this course. So I think five shots might be a little too far back. Not saying that he couldn't shoot a 61 or 62 and win it, but I'm saying the guys above him might only need to shoot 64 or 65 to win it. It's good value at 9-1 for a guy who's playing well. If I had to choose between Todd and Johnson, I would choose Johnson, but I was right there with you. I wasn't high on Johnson, and not to throw eat crow on our column, but each of the last 2 weeks, one of our people each week has picked someone to miss the cut, and that person has done awesome that week. So I think maybe as the deputy editor of the column, I'm going to prevent you guys from ever picking someone to miss the cut. Because last week, you picked DeChambeau to miss the cut, and he almost won the thing. And I won't throw the bear under the bus, but Dustin Johnson was one of his guys to miss the cut, and Dustin Johnson's right there. But he also had Victor Hovland winning. So,
here's the thing, David. I think because the article is such a hot article, because it's really one of the only things that you can gamble on right now, the article is getting so many clicks each and every week on our chalk site that I think the players are reading it, and they're seeing that we're picking them to not even to miss the cut, and they're like, you know what? Extra motivation. Billboard material.
I like it. Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau each had the chalk article up on their locker inside
the
last two tournaments. But Johnson's playing very good this week. It's I'm right there with you. I can admit it that I picked against him yesterday. I had Sung Young No against him in a money line parlay, and I had three dogs that I picked, and that was the only one I lost, and I lost by about eight shots. So probably wasn't the best play. I don't think any of us saw this coming from Johnson, and I mean, he puts together a good round today. He's a better golfer than Todd. I will tell you that I had a buddy of mine tell me earlier this week to watch out for Brendan Todd, and I didn't take him. I did put him in a DraftKings lineup, the only one that is winning money, but I did not take him at the whatever 250-1 that he was. I should have listened.
Wow.
But yeah, I'd be hedging that puppy off today.
Here's the thing. Listen, it's one thing to hunt. It's another thing to be the hunted.
Yep.
And when you talk to professional golfers, it's a very difficult thing. And because we haven't seen Brendan Todd be at the top of leaderboard that often in his career, I just, you know, I don't see him winning this thing. I see either Dustin Johnson winning it, DeChambeau winning it, maybe Phil Mickelson. He has a shot of 71, a horrible, I mean, 71 for all of us is fantastic, but a horrible Saturday for Phil, maybe even Answer. I loved Answer coming into this thing. So let me share with you some of the guys I have top five. Answer, you could get it plus 225. Phil at plus 400. Hovland at plus 500. Those are three of the guys that I see. If they come out and they just have a phenomenal round of golf, they shoot a 61. Maybe they could get somewhere in regard to forcing a playoff here. Who do you like finishing in the top five?
It's definitely a tournament where that allows for it because you can shoot 61, 62 on Sunday. I do think that taking DeChambeau, I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Leishman or Patrick Cantlay have a nice round today. I joked on Twitter yesterday when Cantlay was four over on the front nine. I have Cantlay to win and Cantlay in the top 20, so I was pretty confident that a top 20 was going to be fine. And he shoots four over on the front nine. I joked on Twitter that, you know, I was a little annoyed at him, and he turned it around and shot five under on the back. So he's someone who was on fire on the back nine yesterday that I'm hopeful finishes in the top five or top 10. I have him, Hovland, and Leishman all in the top 20, and these are all pre-tournament bets, by the way. And I have Paul Casey at a top 10 finish. I'm not sure he's going to get there. I do like some of your plays. I think Answer would be somebody that I would key in on for a top five for sure, because he can shoot 64, 63, get in the top five and not necessarily win it. To me, it looks like it's a two- or three-man race to win the thing.
Top 10, Rory, Stanley, Gordon. How about this? Gordon right now is tied for 12th. He's 11 under. He shot a 62 on Friday. You could get him to finish in the top 10 at plus 350.
Didn't you say you also liked him today versus John Rahm?
I do. I do like him. Well, I'm going to get to those matchups in a second. Top 20. I love Doc Redman. I've liked him since Thursday, since the tournament began. You get him to finish in the top 20, 10-1. Duncan at plus 650. Neiman at plus 185. Casey, your guy at Cantlay, your guy at plus 140, and Casey at plus 170. In regards to the matchups, let's start with this one, and that's Will Gordon. This is a guy that, you know, in the research I was doing on Tuesday and Wednesday, his name kept on popping up in a lot of the analytic articles that I was reading. And right now, like I said, where is he right now? I just shared with you. Right now, he's tied for 12th. He's 11 under. He shot 66 on Thursday, 62 on Friday, a 71 yesterday. If he could rebound and come back and have a great round four, you can get him plus 265 over John Rahm.
And he's already one shot ahead of John Rahm to begin with in terms of how he's faced for three rounds. I think it's a good one. I mean, you're getting 2.5 to 1 on your money. And if you decided to take it plus a half a shot to try to win it for push, you're still getting plus 190, 200. So I do like that one. It's a good dog. It's a very good one.
Redman over Grillo, minus 114. I like Furyk. I like the way Furyk's been playing this course over Sergio, plus, and that's plus money, plus 135. And Phil, I think Phil rebounds today. Phil over Hoffman, minus 105. Those are some of the matches I like heading into round four. Who do you like? Who's your best bet today in regard to matches, David?
I did fade Phil yesterday and won on that one. I do like the play today for Phil. I think that would be a good one. I would take Cantlay over Burns. You know, I'm just, again, I've been on Cantlay all week, so I like that one. I would also take Xander Schauffele over Long. I think Rory puts together a good round today, so Rory would be a good one. Probably somebody could sneak into the top 10. If you look at the entire board, I'm looking at it right now, between minus 13, which is where Bryson is, and minus 10, where Rahm is, you have about 13 golfers that are all within two shots of each other. Any of them can sneak into the top 10. I would take Victor Hovland to finish off a very good round today against Kyle Stanley. I think that's one where Hovland may not, he may be too far back to win it, but it wouldn't stun me to see Hovland shoot a 64, and then the bear picked him to win it and finish T2, T3. Those are some of the guys. I do agree that DeChambeau would do well. The Hughes-Shrillman match, which is the second-to-last pairing, is one that I'm staying away from. Mackenzie Hughes has obviously shown he can shoot low and play around with the big boys, but I like the way Strowman played yesterday as well. So it's two guys who put together very, very good rounds in this tournament. Overall, I think the level of play for almost everybody except for Justin Thomas has been pretty good. And that, I want to ask you that. How much did that surprise you, how poorly Justin played?
Very surprised me a lot. I want to say on Thursday I had him finishing like either in the top five or top ten, so it was pretty shocked that he didn't make the cut. And the article, as you know, I picked Brooks Koepka to win, and I have not been high on Brooks Koepka for quite a while now, especially after his knee surgery, and then there were some reports that he slipped on a cart path and tweaked the knee, and that was a few months back, and then of course the pandemic. But man, I loved what I saw from him at the Colonial as well as the Heritage, and I had him winning this damn thing, and then of course he withdrew. I do want to give, before I let you go, because the conversation I had in the first hour of my show is just how we as a society and sport in general, leagues in general, are handling the pandemic. And I know I crushed the PGA Tour last week in how they handled Nick Watney. I want to commend them this week in how they handled Jason Day. And for folks who don't know what I'm talking about, Jason Day woke up yesterday not feeling well. But he had a certain tee time, and he still wanted. He felt like he was still feeling well enough to play. And what the PGA Tour did was they removed him from his twosome, or his, it was threesomes yesterday, right? Because the weather was bad, and they had him play solo. They had him play single alone, just to be cautious. Where the week before, Nick Watney showed up to the course on Friday not feeling well, and they let him go to the driving range and hang out with everyone. And then and one of the guys that he was close in contact with was Brooks Koepka, and then Brooks Koepka's caddy came down positive, and then Brooks withdrew from this tournament at the Travelers. So I just want to commend the PGA Tour in regard to the decision of allowing Jason Day to roll solo yesterday. I think that was a very wise decision considering, you know, what we saw last week.
Listen, this is all new to us, and I know you and I, when we golfed on Monday, we talked about the way the PGA Tour handled last week and Watney and some of the other things, allowing players to continue. And this week, you know, it all came to a head on Wednesday when you had Koepka and Koepka's caddy and McDowell's caddy and a whole bunch of other people pulling out. And I was actually very surprised the tournament actually was played. I thought the commissioner was flying in to cancel the whole thing, and they put new procedures in there. And I do think they handled the Jason Day thing appropriately yesterday. Of course, Jason Day's not in contention, and he didn't play his way into contention. You wonder what the reaction would be if Jason Day went out there yesterday and shot a 61 all by himself, if there would be people out there complaining about the fact that he got to play by himself. But there have been others that played by themselves as well, because I believe Wallace played by himself when two other players withdrew. It's something new for all of us, and this is an individual sport that you can get away with doing that. I don't know what happens when, you know, an NFL player, an NBA player shows up and doesn't feel well. It's hard to isolate them from a team sport, but I guess we're going to find out.
Yes, we will. David, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Sure. Throw out your social media handles and all that so people can follow you and get some great picks.
Sure. At D Bearman, ESPN, B-E-A-R-M-A-N, ESPN. And then obviously you can follow us at www.espn.com/chalk for all of the picks and analysis that we throw out there every single week. So we have a couple of live ones there. The Bear has Hovland, and I have Cantley and a few others. And so we still have a couple out there. I know Dustin Johnson was talked about in the article, as was a few other players. So we may not have the winner this week like we had last week, but it's a good piece to read, and we have a bunch of matchups in there.
Another guy that I really liked coming in was Niemann. He's 8 under, so I think he's 10 shots back, not to win it. But hopefully if he comes out, he puts a good round in. I would definitely throw some money on him finishing in the top 10. So.
And then we start all over again with a brand new tournament next week.
We certainly do. Last question for you. When do we see Tiger? Memorial?
Probably. I would find it hard for him to turn down Jack's event, so he'll probably right. be there. I don't blame him for not wanting to play these other ones and taking it safe. And I wouldn't be stunned if he only played majors, WGCs, and Jack's event. I mean, he's allowed to do it, so he's going to do it. And I mean, he doesn't want to be there with everybody else, and I'm not surprised, and that's fine. He can play wherever he wants to play.
All right, David, hey, hit him straight today. Enjoy. Looks like it's a beautiful day outside. And thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Darling, hold my hand. You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Well, Michael, the NFLPA's medical director, Tom Mayer, is recommending that they don't work out together, but it doesn't mean that players won't actually work out together, as we're seeing in Tampa, where the Buccaneers already, as you mentioned, have had one assistant coach test positive for COVID-19. Two players have it as well, and those are the individuals we know about. There could be others. The fact of the matter is, players do what they want to do, just as people in our society are doing what they want to do. Some people wear masks, some don't. Some people are told not to work out, they do anyway. So again, it's all an individual choice, and right now these Buccaneers players believe that it's a bigger priority to be ready for the start of training camp whenever that begins, and they're not concerned with Dr. Mayer's recommendation. They care more about getting ready and being in shape for the start of training camp whenever it kicks off.
That is Adam Schefter, really pretty much laying it out exactly what took place this week. Without further ado, let's bring in Jenna Lane. She covers the Bucs down in Florida. And Jenna, as I said, boy, what a year you have before you, maybe the next three with Tom Brady there. If you can, before we start diving into specifics, how different is it to cover this team when you have arguably the best quarterback of all time as your field general?
Oh, God. Well, first of all, Anita, it's been great to talk to you because I miss you. I hate the fact that I haven't gotten a chance to see you with all these cancellations and everything. And if I sound out of breath, it's only because I'm trying to get in some shuttle runs before the heat index goes to 108. That's what it was yesterday. So you'll have to bear with me on that. I know it's been so hot. And it's cloudy out here because of that Saharan dust that's blowing over. So it's been interesting. But yeah, this offseason has been just dramatically different, and it changed overnight. I mean, you've gone from Tampa Bay, which has been an afterthought really for, you know, the last decade and a half, and now suddenly it's, I don't want to say it's the center of the NFL universe because I don't think it's there yet, and they haven't done anything to warrant that, but there are certainly a lot more eyes and ears on the Buccaneers right now, certainly a lot more attention, and my phone has definitely been blowing up this offseason, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know, me reaching out to you this weekend, obviously being, I'm sure, one of many. So let's dive into it. We just heard from Adam Schefter. We know what time it is. You know, at the end of the day, I get it. What it comes down to is, A, this is a bad look for Tom Brady, who's supposed to be the face and one of the leaders of the NFL, you know, in a pandemic world, trying to do the right thing, trying to do the safe thing. And then on the other side of the spectrum, is Tom Brady, who is dead set on proving that he could win a Super Bowl without Bill Belichick, and the importance of not just this season, but who knows, maybe the next two or three season, he plans to be with the Tampa Bay Bucs. And, you know, I envision the scale of justice and him winning a Super Bowl is outweighing public safety. Are you seeing it that way as well?
Basically, you know, and I understand that when it come fall, nobody's going to care that Tom Brady missed all OTAs, all of minicamp. He didn't get those reps that were necessary to really grasp a playbook, at least not in official capacity. So he wasn't able to do that because of this pandemic. And people can argue, yeah, well, all the other teams missed their reps too. But he's also going to be playing in an offense for the first time in 20 years, and he's got a short window. It's 2 years here, and who knows if he's going to continue playing after that. That's right around the age when he said that he wanted to retire. He understands that the pressure and the expectations are on him, and so he's doing what he feels like he needs to do to prepare, and I get that. And I would also say that, you know, the state of Florida has been a lot more aggressive in reopening versus some northern states like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And so a lot of these players have kids that they're, and coaches too, their kids are already practicing. You know, high schools are practicing, youth leagues are practicing. And so they don't view this as they're, you know, really breaking rules per se. You know, these are guidelines that are being suggested, but I think we're all watching what's happening with MLB. I mean, the fact that the Colorado Rockies had three players that tested positive from working out together, the fact that you have NBA players that are reporting now, and it's a good thing they're getting tested now, but they're, you know, testing positive for coronavirus. And these leagues are taking all the measures necessary to ensure that everyone is going to be safe. But, you know, we all know that, you know, it just takes a couple cases for this thing to really go awry. I mean, that's what happened in the NBA, right? So I think people are just really concerned. you know, about having football back, which I think everybody wants some semblance of normalcy. But also, like you said, the optics of this, is it really the best look? The cases in this area, while they don't resemble New York's yet, as you know, it doesn't take much to get this thing really moving. I mean, we have a map that the state puts out of our zip codes, and it's color coded based on, you know, the rate of infections in your area. And I've seen my area go from, you know, light blue, a turquoise is considered like very, very low infections. In just a matter of days, the rates in my zip code have more than quadrupled, and my area is now all red, which means over 300 cases in that particular zip code. And those numbers are only going to go up. And, you know, I think that that's just really, really concerning for people. And I've talked to healthcare professionals too. One who told me this is a slap in the face. This is like someone spitting in my face because of what we're trying to accomplish here. The thing is Tom Brady's a very thoughtful person. He's also a very competitive person too. So I know that that bothers him when people say those types of things. I know he's also looked into possibly moving the location of these workouts. Not just due to optics, but maybe putting them in a safer environment to where they don't have to worry about this as much. But even so, I mean, as the NFLPA said, it's really not in the player's best interest or the best interest of the league for everybody to be practicing together.
But here's the thing, Jenna, nobody else is doing it. You know, the San Francisco 49ers, they got together as soon as they heard that the NFLPA, and granted, from what I understand, two Bucs players came down positive, right?
Yep, two Bucs players and an assistant coach.
Okay. Same thing with the San Francisco 49ers. A few players came down positive. From what I understand, Jimmy Garoppolo got tested. I don't know what the test results were. I don't know if he came back positive or negative. Whatever the case, that's, you know, HIPAA. That's his private information. Some players want it out there. Some players do not, which I think, which by the way, Jenna, I think is going to be very, very difficult and interesting heading into this season, because, you know, hypothetically speaking, let's say it's Sunday morning game time, and all of a sudden, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is inactive. Well, why? Why is he was not on the injury report all week? You know, our team's going to have to report COVID-19. You know, they don't have to. So it's going to be wild in regard to how leagues are going to handle it, and there are some players out there that don't want their information. You know, from what I understand, you know, Ezekiel Elliott was somewhat upset when reports came out that he came down positive for COVID-19, but regardless, you know, other quarterbacks who want to get out there and practice, especially there's musical chairs when it comes to the quarterback position. There's a number of quarterbacks out there that are new teams that haven't had a lot of time to work with players or their wide receiving core and all that. And they're doing the right thing. I just think this is a really horrible look, Jenna. I really do.
Well, and you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. You know, not only is he a new quarterback in a new system, but he's got a new head coach. So I really feel for teams that are in that predicament. And look, the Bucs aren't commenting publicly on this. Not a lot of people have. In fact, Dee Smith's comments were really the first, because I'd reached out to the NFLPA, and they just said, you know, we're going to revert back to what our medical expert, Dr. Tom Mayer, put out there. We're going to stand by this statement that we're advising players not to do this. You know, it was good that Dee Smith spoke specifically to the workouts that Tom Brady and Russell Wilson and some of the other players have been putting on. It was good that he spoke to that, because I think sometimes players need to hear that. But, you know, back to what you were saying about reporting come fall, why players are mysteriously, you know, not playing. We do get on the injury report that it says illness, but that could mean any number of things. It could mean, you know, they have the flu. It could mean food poisoning. It could mean all sorts of things. So even me as a reporter, I struggle with that quite a bit, because I've heard rumblings about certain things, but I also don't necessarily feel comfortable outing someone, because I think there's a large stigma that I've seen associated with people. Like, so many of my friends I have learned have quietly tested positive and that just don't want to make a big production about it, because they're fearful that people are going to come after them, even their loved ones, and say, well, you shouldn't have been doing this. I had a friend that went out in a group of 9 people. You might hear that's a large group, but he quarantined all through this whole pandemic since March, went out one time, and 7 of 9 friends tested positive. That's all it takes, is one exposure, but not everybody understands that. And so I can certainly sympathize with people that want to keep it quiet. I really can.
Again, Jenna Lane joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, does an excellent job for ESPN covering all things NFL, specifically the Tampa Bay Bucks. Hey, before we let you go, big story here in New York City is Jamal Adams wanting out, his team requesting that their camp can start, you know, knocking on some doors to see if what teams would be interested in a trade offer with the Jets. I'm sure the Jets are going to be offering the world for Jamal Adams, considering he's one of the top defensive players in the NFL. He put together a list of teams that he would be willing and wanting to be traded to, and the Tampa Bay Bucks were one of them. So that's another reason why I wanted to get you on. Your thoughts, is that a realistic landing place for Jamal Adams, and do you think that would happen?
Financially, I think it's going to be really difficult for them to do that because the Bucks have under $5 million in cap space. They do have a lot of question marks, their safety position. And I talked to Adams about Todd Bowles, I want to say it was a year ago, and he just sang his praises. He adores him. I know that the feeling is mutual, but they just don't have a lot of money. That's the same reason why, because I know they have interest in Devonta Freeman, and they certainly need a more of a reliable option at running back. I know Ronald Jones, his hands are a little bit suspect still, and Keyshawn Vaughn, watching him on tape, I don't know if he's going to be more than a 3.6 yards per carry guy. I don't think he's really an upgrade over Peyton Barber. That's just my personal opinion. Dari Ogunbowale hasn't really flashed enough, although I think it's possible that he could fill that third down role. But, you know, they have a lot. They still have needs they have to address. And having less than $5 million for the year is going to be really, really tough to be able to do that, especially when you consider that, you know, Adams wants to be compensated fairly, and you see the numbers that he's thrown out there, you know, well exceeding that amount. I don't think he's going to get $20 million per season. I would also say this. He shares the same agent as the Bucks' previous starting free safety, Justin Evans. So I think that's something to also keep an eye on. Evans missed all of last year because of ankle and foot injuries. He just wasn't able to get healthy. But when he is able to get healthy, I think he could be a pretty impactful player. I think we saw that his rookie season. Would that play a role in it? Maybe, possibly so. You never know. But it's something to keep an eye on. I just don't see how they could do it financially. I think they'd love to if they could, but they would definitely have to move some money around to be able to do that, for sure.
How has Todd Bowles been in Tampa? There are a few Jets fans here that couldn't wait for him to get out of town. I love Todd Bowles. I'm thrilled for him. Tampa Bay Bucks defense was better than I think what most people realized last season. How has it been for Todd Bowles in Tampa?
You know, we saw a lot of ups and downs from this Bucks defense, but they had such a young secondary, and I think you're not going to fix what has been an issue for the Bucks for a long time, their secondary. I mean, that's really been their Achilles heel for some time, regardless of who the head coach was, whether it would be Mike Smith or even before that with Lovie Smith. This group is just so young. And the jump that I saw, like if you look at just the entire body of work from last year, you know, all the statistics together, you may not see like what you're hoping for per se, but when you look at say the final 10 games of the season, or even the final maybe 8 games or 6 games of the season, I really think it was after the Seattle game, you really started to see some growth from that group. And I give Todd Bowles a lot of credit because this is a guy who already spends a lot of time in the office, right? You know, he's showing up, you know, at 5 a.m. because he's got these young rookies that want to meet with him in his office. And I've joked with him throughout the year, you really need to ask for some more office furniture, because by the time he gets in his office, he's got no office furniture because these young guys are wanting to meet with him. Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, Mike Edwards, and they want to pick his brain and they want to watch film with him. As a former head coach, you don't always see that from defensive coordinators. You know, that's more maybe the role of a position coach. But here he is as a defensive coordinator and I think one of the brightest defensive minds in the game, you know, spending time with these young guys to get them up to speed. And once they started to do that towards the end of the season, you really started to see a big change. Jamel Dean made the game-winning play, a game-winning interception against the Arizona Cardinals. Sean Murphy Bunting had two game-winning interceptions against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he had a pick six against the Detroit Lions. So I saw a big jump from those guys, and I think Todd Bowles is a big reason why. And I got to say, I love having him here in Tampa Bay. I know that there were some questions about his ability as a head coach. He is a heck of a defensive coordinator. And I've also really enjoyed the fact that I think he's showing a little bit more of a personal side of himself. I don't know if you saw, but like during a Zoom call that we had with him, his youngest son accidentally photobombed the Zoom call. He kind of just walked in. He crashed the Zoom call. It was the cutest, greatest thing ever. And I found him even more relatable because so many parents that are working from home right now, maybe their kids aren't able to go to summer camp or anything like that. They're struggling with that same thing with their kids inadvertently crashing their own Zoom calls.
Yeah, it's Zoom has taken over the world, hasn't it? Jenna,
yes.
Jenna, thank you so much. Last thing for you before I let you go, because I'm going to start talking about some future bets out there in regard to the Bucks. What do you expect? Do you expect them, because we're living in this COVID pandemic world, we don't know what training camp's going to look like. There's a chance that we might not have any preseason games. Are you buying the Bucks win the division, let alone compete for a Super Bowl this year? What's your gut telling you, Jenna?
You know, my gut's telling me that we need to temper expectations, and that's not a knock on Brady or anybody, but everybody keeps saying Super Bowl. Very few guys on this roster have even played in the playoffs. They have, very few of them have any sort of postseason experience. And I don't want to set them up to fail because I think they're going to make great strides with Tom Brady, but I'm reluctant to say that they're a Super Bowl contender. If they do, I think it'll be nothing short of amazing. And I certainly will be along for the ride, but I think we should temper our expectations. I think it would be a big step in the right direction if they can just get to the playoffs, because especially in a division like the NFC South, it's so quarterback dominant, but not just that, but the Saints have really had a hold on the top of the division for some time now. So it's definitely going to be fun to watch Brady and Breeze battle it out. But I think it's more realistic to say, you know what, they're a playoff contender. And maybe they can go deep in the playoffs. I just don't see them going all the way.
Jenna, thanks for spending some time with us this morning. I appreciate it. Get back to your workout. Great to hear your voice. And I'm sure we'll have you on throughout the NFL season, considering Tampa's going to be a hot spot, not just because of COVID-19, but because of Tom Brady and the Bucks and what a lot of people would anticipate them to do this season. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks, Anita. Always great catching up with you. Stay safe, my friend.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.